The Danger Gnome Podcast, April 2020. Welcome, cats and kitties. It is the Danger Gnome for April. And on this show, we're going to talk to the winners and the podium folks from Madison, Wisconsin, that podiumed and won the men's and women's champion of the Fat Bike Berkey, and Heather Stalgis, who took third. So they all live in Madison, so I got them on the phone. And that's what we got coming up right after this. Hey, you know who we have on the show? Leah Schneeberger. Welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Leah. I'm back. And fat.
Yeah, man. You're in your own private Idaho out there.
In my own private Idaho, yep. Somewhere, I actually stay in with Amy and Chris Stewart. Amy was the one that won the Fat Bike Nationals a couple years back, that raced the Berkey a couple times too.
Yeah,
they're letting me bunk with them. We're quarantining together.
What the heck? I saw on her Instagram she had some crazy Bride of Frankenstein hairdo going.
Yeah, it was some stream where everyone's supposed to post some embarrassing picture of themselves.
Ah, okay.
I'm sure a lot of us look like that since we've just been sitting at home all day, every day.
Yeah. Welcome to my world. My life actually hasn't changed that much.
Yeah. I mean, this whole isolation thing isn't much different for me other than I can't work. But, I mean, what do? I go out and ride my bike in the mountains anyway.
There you go.
Just so, can't do the group rides.
Right. Or you know.
You know what's great right now about riding on the trails is there's a lot of hikers in this town. They got dogs and there's hikers, and apparently they don't necessarily get off the trail usually
But
when
now,
you're coming up on them, but now they're getting 6 feet off the trail. So it is wide open.
Yeah. I tell you, it's going to change society. You're just going to look at
it. You got to find the bright side, man.
Until we build up an immunity or get inoculated for this thing, everyone is a possible carrier.
Hello, brother. Oh, man. Everybody's looking at me like I'm trying to kill them.
Really? They're probably just
I feel like everyone looks at me like I'm going to kill him.
Aren't you Leah Schneeberger, the Ice Queen, winner of the Fat Bike Berkey? You'd be like, maybe.
Some lady posts on my Strava that lives here. She's like, you know, if you travel here, you're supposed to quarantine yourself for 14 days.
Yikes.
I'm like, oh, lady, you need to back up real quick on that.
Well,
you're like, you don't know me. Don't try and judge me. Like, you're talking to the wrong gal right now. And then she goes, and by the way, congratulations on the Berkey. I'm like, oh, you are not padding that with that bullshit.
Oh, and by the way, you look really nice today.
Oh, my God.
In quarantine.
Oh, it was so funny because, like, I got that message on my Strava the day after I took a couple of her queens.
Oh.
Knock, knock. Oh, right. Here's an outsider.
Oh, well. That's just understandable. You know, she's just trying to shoo away the competition.
But, I know, right? Can you blame her? I was like, what I should have said is, honey, if I had the coronavirus, I wouldn't be able to throw down on all your queens the way I have been the last day and a half.
Oh, dude. So, I actually had the thought the other day because the trails opened up here for a day before we got rain again. But I actually got to ride to the trails and then ride the trails, the ones that you swear don't exist, which is really good because I can lay down, and while I was riding that section, I'm like, damn, I'm flying today. I bet you I have to lay down. I have to lay down the smack. I have to challenge Leia on this segment.
Yeah,
because it's the segment. You know,
the set the bar high, Gomez. Set it high.
Well,
there will be a day where I come back to Wisconsin. Hopefully,
well, like, I know
for the near future, you're safe because I think I'm going to just hunker down in Boise here for the next couple weeks.
My Romulan cloaking device of those trails is in full force unless we have a power outage. You'll never find them. Sorry, I went all kind of Star Trek on you there, but there's an awkward silence.
It's okay. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I'm Star Wars, not Star Trek, but yeah,
I get it. Okay. You know, but they're both cool. I was just saying how Gene Roddenberry had created this utopic society.
You just get off on like tangents, Gomez. Bring it back. Pull it back.
So the Fat Bike
reel them in.
A three year quest to repeat as champion of the Fat Bike Berkey. How does it feel, champ?
Oh yeah, it feels really good to get that back. I wanted it. I wanted it real bad.
That's cool.
I was going down the wrong way, you know. First, second, third. I was going in the wrong direction, so I had to do everything in my power to get it back.
So
and now I feel like I can retire from it, but I don't know.
That's just so 2018s, like, you know.
Well, right now, I mean, what is anybody training for anyway?
We can all race on Strava. Queens on Strava.
Yeah,
Kings
might as
Strava.
Well. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be Zwift racing and just trying to be the number one guy on the Strava, I guess.
Well,
I mean, I'm just working out because I got nothing better to do.
Right. Because don't you love to ride bikes, though?
Yeah, I'm having a blast. These trails out here are fabulous.
Yeah, my favorite.
My favorite climbing trail is
in out of Ketchum there. It's actually out of Stanley, but
yeah. So right now I can't do Ketchum because that's still snow covered. Yeah, it's too high. But in Boise, it's hero dirt right now, and Amy's been taking me out and just kicking my ass because she just climbs like a freaking goat.
Nice.
And they have real elevation here. Like, okay, we're gonna climb for 40 minutes, right? Quick, or sometimes we'll be nearing the top. She's like, "Oh, we're gonna be almost done with this climb." And like 15 minutes later, I'm like, "Amy, when someone says to me we're almost done, I'm thinking 30 seconds, right?
Or at least 5 minutes, like, you know."
God. Yeah, we're almost done. 20 minutes later, Ames.
Right. Well, you know, once you get to lay of the land, you're going to own that stuff.
We got lucky, though. We got to get that Berkey in before all this went down.
Yeah, I got to race
so
in the Talkeetna Trio myself that very same day. And then everything kind of got...
Everything was perfect until it wasn't.
Yeah, precisely.
But the Berkey was pretty phenomenal. That was the best conditions that they've ever had.
I mean,
the course was white cement. I mean, it was ripping fast. And a lot of big names there again this year. Everyone's wanting that title.
Did you get the separate ladies start?
No, I'd been working on that, and I got an email the week of... from the director saying that there were not enough women that wanted it or wanted to participate.
Mm-hmm.
So we just went back to starting with the men, which is okay. I guess if there's only 7 ladies out there on our own, doesn't make a lot of sense. And so I understand, and hopefully we can just get more women that will want to line up.
Right.
Together. And I guess the mark is about 25. Hmm. So we need to
try and
recruit 25 women who will go out ahead.
One full gate.
Yeah. Okay. But what was cool is they had us start on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was preferred start and then the rest of the waves.
Gotcha.
So this time we actually got to see who we were up against, because mm-hmm. a lot of times everybody's all over the place, and sure. so you don't even know where your competition is. So it's nice to at least start with them so you can eyeball them.
Sure. Yeah, so you know who to watch and to make
who's
sure.
Who's where,
you,
yeah, right, and who you, to mark.
Right, who to get, make sure to get on that train if they jump on a train.
Exactly.
Dudes. Have you thought about like recruiting a team of not the elite level, but someone that can pace you through that first half of that race or the first three quarters of that race? Some domestiques.
That would be nice. I mean, there's a huge advantage when you have teammates out there.
Yeah.
This year, I couldn't land on, you know, any of the wheels of the guys that I was hoping to land on. Mm-hmm. But right from the start, Sonia, who was the person I was marking, I really wanted to just follow her and do whatever she did because she won it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, boy, she just pinned it like a bat out of hell, man. And I stuck with her as long as I could, but her pace was so high. I could not hold it. I just wasn't confident that I'd be able to do that mm-hmm. all day. So I let her go, and man, I mean, she's just a freaking pistol. Boom, gone.
Hmm.
Like, all right, here we go again. Well, I'm going to just ride my race. And I got in with a good pack of guys. I think there was five or six of them. And we started working together, and I felt pretty good about them, and their pace was good. So I just stayed where I was. And my hope was that maybe she would run out of gas or something. Like, because I'm telling you, that it was so fast, the pace that she was holding.
Hmm.
And I don't know, about 7-8 miles in, I see her, and she's on the wheel of about 4 or 5 guys. One or two of them were teammates because they kind of had the same kit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you round a couple corners, and then it's down to only 2 guys in front of her. And then round a couple of corners, and then it's just her. And that's when I knew, oh my gosh, this could be a race.
Hmm.
So she was on her own, and I know how badly that hurts.
Right.
And so my hope was that she had buried herself far enough that my group would just blaze on by. But that wasn't the case. We weren't going fast enough, and she was able to jump on.
Mm-hmm.
And ride with us. So it actually made it a really fun race, because now for the majority of the race, I was racing another woman
mm-hmm.
and we were together and we were playing games and we were making moves and okay, am I going to be able to hold this pace? What do I do now? So a lot of these roadie type mm-hmm. tactics started playing through my head. You know, I had to start figuring out the strategy on how to do this, because I wasn't going to just out muscle her. No way. She was there. So we rode together, and from that point on until the last 3 miles,
mm-hmm.
shimmying back and forth. And we had a good pack of guys. And what would happen is one or two of them would make a move mm-hmm. and I would respond and I'd jump on their wheel. And what I was hoping is that she wouldn't be able to catch onto the move, right?
Right. Yeah,
So I'd respond to an attack, hoping that I could gap the rest of the group with the 2 guys that were in front.
Right.
And I tried that several times, but she caught on every time.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work, because I'm doing the work to catch the guys that are breaking away, and everybody else is sitting in. And I'm not going to be able to, I'm burning up too many matches.
Sure.
And so then you start to think about, how do I conserve as much energy if this is going to come down to the wire and like a sprint finish? So I backed it off, and my natural desire is to catch. Like, if anyone's getting away, I want to catch them. And I had to let that go. So as one or two guys started bridging away, I had to let them go and stick with Sonia,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I just couldn't keep being the guy that does the work to bridge these gaps.
Right.
And so our group started getting smaller and smaller. And then it came down to just three of us, me, her, and one other guy. And with 3 miles left, a guy from who must have started in a wave way far back came barreling through. And I thought, okay, if I can make a super hard move right now and catch his wheel, I could try and win this thing right now, because I really didn't want it to come down to a sprint finish.
Right.
So I made a move and I went after him, and she didn't come. And the problem was I didn't catch the guy.
Oh, dude.
I mean, I'm all out in the red. I'm going to blow up, like just blow right the fuck up. And I didn't get him. And that hurt so bad, because, you know, the hope is that you burn that match and then you can sit in on someone's wheel, and right. It just didn't happen. So now I'm in no man's land, and I look back, and, you know, they're not too far back, maybe 20, 30 seconds, but they're gaining on me because she's still working with the guy.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, this is really bad. But then, he took off and she didn't follow. So the guy that we were with, he ended up passing me, and he was going way too fast. I wasn't going to try it again.
Mm-hmm.
So then the last 2 miles, at least it was just her and I alone on our own. And the entire time I probably just had 20 seconds on her, and I'm hurting so bad. My quads are about to bust in half. And it's just like, okay, you trained 3 months for this. You've got 2 miles to go, which is potentially only 8 minutes. Like, you're like, shut up legs and pedal.
Right.
So yeah. I mean, every time I'm put any power onto the pedal, my quads was just lighting up, but kept going anyway and got out of the seat and sprinted everything that I had, and ended up crossing the line. And it was such a great race. I mean, I think it was the closest finish that the women have ever had in the Berkey. It was only 8 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So yeah, we raced to the very end, and it was just great racing with her. And she's such a nice person. I mean, she's kind of like was chit chatting.
Yeah.
And I'm dying. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I can't talk to you right now. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm so deep in the hurt locker right now. You know, and she's like, it's just great to be riding with you guys. And, you know, so you learn a lot from everybody that you race with. And I learned a lot from her that day. And, you know, and also when you're out there and you start playing games and trying to conserve energy, you're slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what you got to be careful of is, do you have a big enough gap that you can do that without number 3, 4, 5 coming up behind you in, let's say, a group?
All right.
So it ended up, you know, we were going fast enough. So we ended up in 1 and 2, but then you had Heather, who was only, I don't know, a minute and a half back. So she must have just been plowing the whole time.
Working her program for that race, you know?
Yeah, her program, her and Corey worked together. So her husband, Corey, won it, and she took third. She's on the podium again.
And that's, that's all Madisonians too.
Well, yeah, well, the three of us, yeah.
You're a part-time Madisonian now. You're an Idahoan.
Yeah.
You thinking of moving that to Idaho? Right, your own private Idaho? Underground?
Nah, come home. I will be back more often now that I've been here, though.
Oh, man. Yeah. I
definitely want to hit that Sun Valley area later this summer. I've got family up in Haley.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which
is
right outside of Ketchum.
Right. Quite right. Yeah. It's so gorgeous there. I spent a couple of weeks there, and so many creek crossings and beautiful hot springs, especially you get up by Salmon and north of the Galena Pass there out of Ketchum. Just like that perfect chocolate colored single track ribbons of chocolate brown dirt. Gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. Yeah. So the other thing that came out in our the podcast that Travis and I did up in Alaska is that you had said we had shared a couple of texts. I texted you congratulations on your win, and you were like, "Dude, yeah, it's like an undefeated season." So undefeated on a fat bike. 19,
this year,
20.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my second season undefeated on a fat bike. I've done 5 seasons now, mm-hmm. and I've won every single race but 3.
Dude.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet, huh?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm done, I'm retired.
Yeah.
I'm out.
You should become a free agent or something.
No. I'll be biking forever.
I know how you feel because we raced together at the Sweaty Yeti, and the Sweaty Yeti didn't count my last lap.
Ugh. Ooh!
I mean, we could have been tied for like 12th place or something. My team, you won that race, but you know that would be the big difference. They didn't count my lap, but it wouldn't matter.
Come on, count every lap. Every pedal counts. Come on, guys.
Yeah,
their scoring was awkward because my friend Sherry, they missed one of her laps too, but they corrected it. So she ended up getting third.
Yeah. Now, my friend Sherry.
I hope they send her cup.
My friend Sherry as well. Huh, because we're Facebook friends now.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we should shout out to Sherry out there.
Sherry, it is so good.
Homeschooling her chillins. in these times.
Right now. I feel for anybody with kids right now.
Yeah, at least we're free from that.
Ouch.
My dog is just as happy as he's ever
loving
been.
Loving life.
Because my wife is working from home. I've always worked out of an office in the
so home, much so. Attention.
Yeah. So many treats. Yeah. He's going to gain weight. But we'll address that.
Hopefully this gets finished up with, sooner than later. I know it's messing a lot of people up, and I hope everybody out there, guys, just stay safe and healthy, right?
Right on. I
ride your bike solo.
If you're getting your COVID-19 virus information from fatbike.com, you might want to reconsider your choice for medical advice. We got the bicycle thing covered fairly well.
Well, I heard anybody that's using a porta potty at a race is completely immune.
There you go. There you go. Perfect example of why you should not be looking to the fat-bike.com or Fat Bike Radio or any of our affiliates, etc. But what you should be doing is, I don't know, start training harder and step up to the line with the Ice Queen, Leia Schneeberger ladies, and I don't know.
Yeah, let's get our own start, ladies. Come on.
Yeah. Maybe she'll
get on the fat bike train.
Maybe she'll let you get second or something. But appreciate you taking the time out of your
thanks for calling, Gomez.
Western hermit, their life in the Idaho. Say hello to the Stewarts.
I will.
Don't, if they still have that Neapolitan state fat bike, do not. Don't ride that thing. It's evil.
Nah, they sold all their fat bikes.
Not a way to go.
They don't get snow here.
Oh yeah, they don't.
Not too much
it's
anyway.
Kind of a desert down in Boise.
Yeah, it's a desert.
All right. Well.
Yeah.
Again, congratulations.
All right, my man. We'll take it easy. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
We'll
bye, guys.
Danger now. Please welcome Heather and Corey Stelgis. Heather took third in her, is second or third Berkey women's podium in a row here, and Corey just won his back-to-back men's Berkey championship.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Thanks for having us, Carrie.
It's my pleasure. I already interviewed Leah Schneeberger, the women's champion. I think we'll go ladies first. Heather, the important question is, did you follow the race traditions of, I remember homemade cookies and going out for pizza somewhere? Or is it homemade pizza?
It's homemade pizza and homemade cookies. Yeah. Both of which were followed this year. Homemade pizza comes with us darn near everywhere for race weekend. Because as it turns out, all you need is a microwave to warm it up. It's not certainly as good straight out of the oven, but it gets the job done. You know, pack some nutritional punch. We did up our homemade pizza in the hotel microwave.
What kind of cookies? Because I can only live vicariously through other people's cookies now.
Yeah, so this year's cookies were Corey's favorite. They are a big old dark chocolate, double chocolate cookie. So they are, they're huge.
And nice. They weigh about a half a pound each.
Oh, it sounds delightful. And there's a double chocolate championship cookies. That's what they'll be known as from now here forward. So we talked to Leah, and I know how tight the women's race was. Why don't you walk us through your race and from the way they started it to all the way through? How did you keep up with because you weren't very far behind. I wrote down Leah and Sonia.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it was super close for me, like it was for them by any means. But that's par for the course for my races. But I would say, I was not super confident going into the race. I felt like my training was good, but I just didn't feel like I had a lot of the information or confidence with which to work to feel like, this could be great. So I think that was certainly on my mind. The other thing that was on my mind is a constant area of growth for me would be my start. I'm an endurance athlete through and through, and so I do not have a lot of firepower and snappiness in general. And so, I think for me, certainly having the call up is pretty fun. That's pretty exciting. It's also nerve wracking.
Yeah.
But with the slow rollout, what I had decided to do was just like, okay, you got to have a better start than you usually do. You got to be uncomfortable. You got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so, I would say that was sort of the race plan is get, focus on having a better start. But then for me, I was still a little hesitant about that because I wasn't so sure about my fitness. And so I kind of split the difference, which is to say I was working on having a better start, keeping in contact, seeing some ponytails, but also riding my race, right? Yeah. Like if I go balls to the wall, like I know Leia can and Sonia can, like I'm going to blow up.
Yeah.
And maybe I wouldn't, but that's my belief. So that was just kind of the plan is, it was a stacked women's field this year, I thought. Mm-hmm. Leia, Sonia, Hannah Grinaker.
I didn't see Jenna Reinhart's name in them, but I only saw the top three names.
I was a little surprised that she wasn't there. Corey and I talked about, maybe she'll show up. That would be interesting for sure. So, and then of course, Jill Cederholm and Megan Barr, you know, and then you just never know who's there. So I just thought, coming into it, I was like, okay, a top five, like, that's really reasonable. Top three would be, you know, outstanding. And, you know, anything on top of that would be glorious and amazing. So, you know, I think ultimately, being I was lined up right next to Leia. And I think just the start was just nice and calm. And I was able to maintain contact. I think I yo-yoed a little bit with Megan Barr and Jill for a bit. You know, Sonia, she was still far ahead, as far ahead as you can be in a rollout sort of way. But
right, Leia said Sonia got away from her.
Yeah,
she ended up catching back up to her.
Yeah, so I mean, rolling out, like I could see Sonia for a little bit, and then Leia and her pink and her ponytail are a little bit easier to catch than Sonia's all black.
Uh-huh.
So I was keeping an eye on her, on Leia. And then I think, you know, right as the snowmobile broke away,
mm-hmm.
I was just sort of like, all right, settle in, but go for this too. And so I was just kind of riding with Jill Cederholm and Megan, keeping in Megan Barr of Minneapolis, and keeping an eye on Leia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a few of those hills, I was like, oh yeah, you remember these hills are your friends, Heather. You get along very well with these Berkey hills. Let's do this. And I think by the time we, you know, really turned into the trail, what is that, like 2K in maybe, Corey? I don't.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe probably 3K in. You just make a sweeping left-hand turn. And I just I just whipped around very smoothly past Megan Barr. And I thought, okay, maybe this is doable. Maybe this is going to be a good day for me. And then I could see Leia. I could see her in a train of dudes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, you can see that ponytail. Let's keep an eye on it. And you know, she was just in a really nice train, and I was in a train of two, and then we'd break up, and then I'd be in another train of two. So I could keep an eye on her until probably about, I would say about 10 or 12 K in. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think that's when some of the climbing really starts to happen. And that was, I was working it, but I definitely lost some of the guys that I was working with during that time. And so it became a little bit more of the Heather and the yo-yo show, if you will.
Yeah.
And so then it was, you know, that's when I lost sight of Leia.
So was that
train
before the 00 turn or?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty, I mean, better than I ever have, but also still relatively early on. So
did you spend a lot of time just out there by yourself, or were you able to grab trains here and there?
Yeah, per the usual, Gary, I'm I was out there like a lone wolf. that's just always what happens.
That's why you come up with the great mantras like these Berkey hills are your friends. You like these Berkey hills. It's good.
Yeah, and they like me. They like me. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, I'm going to use this downhill. So it was definitely just me out there. And, you know, going out, you're on the classic trail.
Mm-hmm.
So they just don't have as much, they're not as hard and as packed as the skate trails. And so they were a little bit mushy, a little bit soft in spaces, felt like a little bit more work.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, so that was certainly in my head where I was like, okay, like this is, watch this. It's, you know, work hard, but don't, let's see how this rolls out, because it is a little bit more work than in these conditions. And so then I mean, once we came to the 00 turn, you know, you hit the skate trail and it is like, it's on, like, yeah, it's pavement style. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, okay, let's really go for this. Not that I wasn't going for it before, but I was like, oh man, this is very nice. Let's get after it and really do some work, right? Like, let's put the power down and go after it. So,
right. Drop, I mean, gear, still, and drop the hammer. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so there's one guy that I was kind of going back and forth with during this time, and, you know, trying to, you know, rest behind him when I could, and then, you know, making moves when necessary. So, and that was just kind of it. I mean, for the rest of the race, just, again, me lone wolfing it out there. And, you know, I think with about 10K to go, you know, I started catching up with some of the dudes that I had been with earlier, but had dropped me. And so, mm-hmm. you know, at that point I was like, okay, well, maybe, you know, maybe there's still.
And you knew there were no other women in front of you, between you and, Leia. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was 99% sure that I was in third.
so, but you never know, right? It's like, and you never know what's coming up on your six either. You know, you could have a couple of people pair up and then all of a sudden you have somebody with maybe fresher legs coming up on you. But
yeah.
You were, how, what was the time differential between, because Leia and Sonya were like 20 seconds or 8 seconds apart. I mean, it was like really super tight.
Yeah. I was a minute and a half behind them.
So that's amazing. That's really, and Leia had said that they had said that that was the closest ladies finish that they've ever had at the Berkey.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, you know, when you're out there and you're lone wolfing it, you just assume that somebody is around the corner, and you also assume that somebody is hunting you down as well.
Yeah.
And so that's just sort of that's it, is right. Like, you just keep on going because you don't know what's going on ahead of you, and you gotta hope that somebody else is losing a little steam. And that was not the case.
Or have a mechanical, or, you know,
right,
or bonk,
right,
or, you
race
know,
over
yeah, things yeah, happen. Like, I was just thinking, is like, the mindset is half predator and half prey, like half coyote and half rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Very, very true. Yeah, and I think to. Oh geez, I lost my train of thought there.
Well, I've
but I, yeah. Oh, I know. I was going to say. I think when I look back at the split, mm-hmm. I think I was making some gains.
Yeah.
And a few people did tell me that, like, you know, some gentlemen on the Nuff Cycle Service team, mm-hmm. With whom I'm proud to ride, you know, said. Yeah, like, I, you know, they came behind me, and they just said, you know, by the time you finish, like, you had closed the gap substantially from when I saw you, or whatever it was. So that makes me feel a little good that, you know, the legs were still strong through the end. But I'll take a minute and a half, considering that I think Leia, you know, has trounced me by, you know, I don't know. I think an hour, maybe 45 minutes or an hour at Polar Roll.
Yeah. And a minute and a half now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I was so surprised when I crossed the finish line. I mean, I saw her there, mm-hmm. and she was like, you know, she was like, oh girl, we were so close together. And I didn't know that she had won at that point. I said, yeah, I kept on looking for your ponytail. And she's like, well, you should have seen for two.
She's going to get a hairnet now, I'm telling you. If she listens to this, she's going to disguise that ponytail, I'm telling you.
It's a good head of hair she's got. So so then she told me, she's like, and then at some point she said something. I was like, holy shit, did you win? And she's like, yeah, I chased her down because I knew that Sonia was way out ahead of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, dang. That is some work. But yeah, it was super, just, I mean,
could you
it was
see,
a beautiful day and great competition.
Could you see a time when there's team trailers and the elite groups have trainers there where you could actually hit that line where all of your cells are open and, you know, all warmed up? I don't know. That's my thinking, like, you said you wanted to have a better start. What a better way than to. That's like a proven thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think the start is, part of it is physical for me.
Yeah.
But there's also a huge part of me that's like, there's a lot of people around you.
Oh, yeah. And
you know, so I think that's the other part where it's like, oh, well, you know, if I'm going to go, the slower I go, the more control I have. And so,
sure.
I mean, I think part of it, yes, for certain is about being, you know, all warmed up. But, you know, to be honest, I think we got there with the most time we've ever gotten on race morning. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably had one of the better warm-ups I've ever, ever had. So, you know, I think that's definitely a part of it. But for me, it's also very much,
sure.
Like,
yeah, I could see that. I didn't think about that though.
Yeah. Wow.
So you did this fabulous feat on a new bike, an Otso Wojtek.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a real beat.
So do you do the tech talk? Because I know that, you know, if I tried this with Leia, she'd be like, la, la, la. She would be like, yeah.
I would say I do not. But I will tell you my observations
on
this in layman's terms, if you will, which is that bike is very, very light and very, very responsive. I think there were numerous times this winter when I was riding or even, you know, racing where I thought, oh, there's no way I should have been able to clear that. Or get up that hill, but this light machine is just propelling me forward. The other aspect is we had some great SRAM components, and so I did have one bigger ring in the back that was, I think, proved to be very helpful in a few different situations throughout the
So SRAM Eagle with the 48 or 50 tooth back there.
Yeah. Corey can tell you what was on there. But that was also really nice. So, I mean, I absolutely adored the purple people eater, as we like to call it. Of course, Corey's bike is yellow, so every once in a while, mine was Professor Plum, and his was Colonel Mustard.
Mustard.
But the Wojtek was, she was just an absolute dream to ride and race. Just fun, snappy. You know, I will say the one thing I do know about it is like the key factor was a little bit better. Like it just felt really comfortable to be riding on it as well.
Very cool.
So, yeah, that's what I got for it. That's the limitations of my tech talk.
All right. And now, Corey, what have you got to say about now the thing that I know that you're a much more scientific person than me. So you have to have some tech talk in you about and especially in the way I kind of categorize fat bikes in my head, the Otso Wojtek and your previous year's Rocky Mountain Suzy Q are a similar narrow Q factor, 27.5, narrowish, but the Wojtek can go up to 4.5s. So what do you think about? Talk tech me on your Wojtek.
Sure. So the Wojtek, yeah, you're right. Like I had last year, the Rocky Mountain Suzy Q and the Wojtek are pretty similar style fat bikes in that they're carbon 177 rear axle standard, and then the narrow Q factor of using the downhill bottom bracket standard, which is like the 83 millimeter threaded, or I think it's like a 121 press fit equivalent.
Right.
So you can use the downhill cranks on them. The Suzy Q was like a 27.5 by 4 inch wheel and tire standard, and the Wojtek's a little bit more flexible than that with the adjustable rear dropout. You can go up to 4.6 tires. Atto's got a very handy chart on their website that also matched my personal experience with tire fitting. Mm-hmm. And that it kind of depends on what brand of tire you're using, what rim width and what dropout position. But, I just ran mine in the shortest chainstay position all year with 4 inch tires. And actually that will fit the new 4.2 inch tires from 45 North as well. And I just found that to be pretty much, you can pretty much tackle anything you want with that setup. For the very soft conditions, the new 4.2 Van Helges are extremely capable. And then running the 4 inch fast tires, the Schwaldis for Fat Berkey, just kind of set it and forget it in the short position is what we found this nice. Winter. But there's certainly a lot more flexibility there. I don't have different rim widths to play around with some of the bigger tires and the summer trail bike options. But
4.2 for a cat that is your weight, you're like a buck 25 or something, right? Or buck.
Well, that's very generous. I'd say more like 135.
Right, I know. Right. I never said I was like a carnival professional. That's just a hobby.
Okay.
Like get the the guess the weight guy, but were you running 80 millimeter 27.5 rims with that 4.2 or 4.0, or was it a 65 millimeter rim?
Oh, it's the head 85 mil carbon rims, and then we've been around 26 inch.
Oh, right on. Okay.
All right. Yeah, all on the Wojtek, all season. Yep.
And what Schwalbe tire did you win the Berkey on? When the racy tire?
The Jumbo Gym.
Oh,
four,
right on.
4.0. Yep.
Beautiful.
It's a proven winner there.
Fantastic. Yeah. Is that the same tire that you won the previous year?
Yeah.
Nice, back to back. So speaking of that, why don't you tell us your race story from the point of your training cycle leading up and how you felt before the race all the way through the nitty gritty of the tactics and how it played out.
Sure. So going all the way back to fall 2019, this year I decided to do a proper fat bike, full winter race season and end my cyclocross racing a little bit early. So I think I raced cyclocross through October, took most of November as kind of my off season, and then started training for my fat bike racing right after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of building fitness throughout the winter. We had a couple high profile fat bike races in mind. There was a new event, or I guess wasn't new this year, but new to us was the Fat Tire Lopet in Minneapolis.
Sure.
And then there was Polar Roll, of course, and Fat Bike Berkey, I guess, are kind of the three big ones, and then combined with some local races in between there. So, yeah, putting in some big training miles in December. We were really lucky. I think everybody in the Midwest, at least, experienced a great winter for fat biking.
Oh, yeah.
And that we really had consistent snowfall, and we didn't get the big storms, you know, of a foot of like really dry powder that was hard to groom. So even here in Madison, we had great riding all winter from the holidays all the way through pretty much Fat Berkey. And then combine that with some trips up north, up to the Eau Claire and Hayward area for some other training rides. I'm just able to get in a lot of great riding. So we're pretty fortunate in our choice of winters to really go after the fat bike cycle. So,
yeah, this is the best winter in the last 5 years, at least.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, probably the best one since like 2014, I think, that I, in my memory anyway.
Yeah.
So that worked out really well. Just kind of felt like fitness was building all throughout the winter. Had some near misses at Fat Tire, Fat Bike, Lopet and Cities, and in Polar Roll. But I had a good feeling going to Fat Bike Berkey.
Yeah.
It's kind of gauging how I've been feeling and you know, how my training was coming, and finally having a chance to back off on some of the hard training in the couple weeks leading up to Fat Berkey. You always kind of get that bounce when you can get the fresh legs back. So,
well, I was telling everybody that would listen, I was like, you and Chris are the two to beat, like you train in a similar way, you have a similar outlook on the bike. It's like, but the wild cards are out there, you know. Like it depends on conditions, right? If it's a slop fest or you're riding the rut, man, you know, you gotta
it's certainly been the way it's played out the last 3 years now with Chris and I.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple wild cards in there. Yep. But, you never know. And there's always the chance that some people that have raced the past couple of years are in much better shape. I know, Peter Leszek, who's third this year, was way stronger than I'd ever seen him there. And, you know, there was a couple points in the race where I thought he could win.
Mm-hmm.
And, you never, and like Will Ross again, you know,
right.
He
didn't
have the race he hoped for last year, but I could tell this year he was a little more focused on it. And I mean, he's won this race before too, always a threat. And you never know when somebody like Ted King is going to show up like happened last year.
Yeah.
So, I never count on, having an easy time of it. That's for sure.
So you're in the starting chute. Anybody talking? Anybody making any predictions there?
No. I think everybody is just kind of, you know, at least I can just speak for myself and a few people I know on the front line there. I think everybody's just trying to kind of keep their nerves in check and.
Yeah.
Stay loose and stay warm and
sure.
Pay attention to the countdown of the race. You know, how many minutes before the start do you take your jacket off? And
so no words of wisdom from Kohlhaas or, you know, like...
No, there's not a lot of chit chat.
Not a lot of chatter going on.
Yeah. Just kind of maybe some handshakes and, some good luck wishes, but, you know, not a lot of like race strategy discussion or anything like that. So I think everybody pretty much knows what they're in for, how things are going to go. And, just trying to get yourself ready. And at least I just always think that, I just try to pay attention to how I'm feeling and just worry about myself and my own race strategy and prepare the body for a sucker fest. So it's just a few mental gymnastics to go through there the last few minutes before the start.
Sure. And then it's a neutral rollout with a snowmobile 4x4 in front of you, and then 3K in, you're into the trail, right?
Right, yep. So, yeah, neutral rollout, pretty standard. Everybody's kind of swarming up around the snowmobile there, and then they turn you loose on the power line section, which is really maybe the first decisive portion of the race. And it kind of depends on the year and you know, how the wind is blowing and who's willing to go to the front, really put the power down. But some years, the first lead selection is made there, where maybe a dozen people separate themselves and start rolling up the trail once it turns into the classic Berkey ski trail and you enter the woods. But this year, I think maybe we had a headwind going out through that section. It seemed a little bit more controlled, and the lead group was much larger. I didn't get a good look at it, but it seemed maybe 20, 30 riders, all at least, you know, within a wheel's, you know, not more than a wheel's gap between each one.
Yikes, that's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is a little nerve-wracking because, you know, you try to stay right near the front. You don't want to be the person leading the whole race right from the start. But then sometimes if you find yourself back in 10th or 12th, well, somebody ahead of you takes the corner slowly or has to sit up on an uphill and you're on the wrong line, you hit some soft snow, and then all of a sudden you're in 25th, you know.
Yeah.
And that can be a problem. So it's definitely kind of an art to metering your effort to stay near the front, not at the front the whole time, but enough to stay safe.
Now I see Isaac Neff was in the top 10. Was he in this elite group? And were you guys working a little tactics?
I mean, not really. I don't think either of us were really on the front too much. So I convinced Isaac to come up and give this race a try this year. It's the first shot at it. We've been riding fat bike together a lot of all winter. And he had a great ride. I think he ended up ninth. And he was very close to holding on for fourth, as I understand it. I think he was kind of caught in no man's land and got caught by the chase group right before the finish, maybe with a mile or two to go. So really good ride by him. But yeah, he was definitely in that group all the way until the selection of three was made over Fire Tower on the return leg. So probably 2/3 of the race, he was right up at the front.
Cool. And now you had started before we talked about Isaac, you were in a group of 25 on the power line on your way towards the turnaround. How did that group whittle down, or did it?
So, I couldn't see the whole group all the time, but I would take a peek back every now and again. It seemed like a lot of riders, the train was kind of yo-yoing, or you know, you kind of have the elastic, it was like a giant elastic cord. So every time somebody went to the front and went hard, whether it was Chris or myself or Peter or somebody else, the elastic would stretch, and that group of 25 would go from being all bunched together to being strung out over, you know, 200 meters maybe. And then, well, the pace would slow and it would all just snap back together again. And all the riders would come posting back up to the front, and you just hear all the free hubs buzzing, you know, behind you. And kind of everybody gets a little nervous, and you don't want to get swarmed. But as you go on, I kind of look at the course, it's like a stair step roller coaster on the way out. You know, there's uphills and downhills, but there's more up than down on the way out. And the elastic cord was stretching and snapping back together as we were making our way out to Double O. And just kind of look at it, you know, everybody's burning fuel, on the way out, and you get to the turnaround and you head up over Fire Tower on the way back. And I'm always kind of thinking, how much gas does everybody have left in the tank when they get to that point? Mm-hmm. And while everybody's together, some people are a lot more tired than others. And at the turnaround, I still felt like I had quite a bit of gas left in the tank, and I could tell a few other people did also. Some of the people towards the back of the elastic band, I think, were getting close to the low fuel light coming on. Mm-hmm. And then when a decisive move went, the pack broke apart a little bit more.
Yeah, historically, it's always been attacks after Double O, like up to like mm-hmm. 5 or 6 attacks that go back years in this break. Well, that's where this race seems to be won every year, is through break, busting up that elite group to maybe 2 or 3 and then winning. But
so, you know, except for two years ago, Chris and I rode pretty much the whole race, just the two of us.
Yeah.
But, I think back to some of the first years I did it when Ned Ovren won.
Right.
I think he attacked right after Double O, and I think he attacked several times very hard, and it took him 3 or 4 attacks to break it apart. Mm-hmm. But he eventually did, and then I think rode a lot of the way in with a narrow gap on the rest of the field. And there's been other years that's really come down to the last 5K or even less. I know 3 years ago when Jordan won on the circuit course, it was more or less a sprint right at the end. So, mm-hmm. You just got to be prepared for everything.
So in that portion of the race after the Double O, are you reacting to moves, or are you being aggressive and laying down attacks?
I try to stay pretty much within myself. I had a few key portions of the course ticked out where I knew I was going to spend my energy to try to get away, and if not get away, at least sap the energy of a lot of my competitors. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the way out is there's a few opportunities because it's climbing. There's a lot of difficult trail. The snow is softer, so it takes more energy to pedal through. So there's always a few opportunities people can get away on the way out. Like when 2 years ago, Chris and I got away, mm-hmm. was a move like that. And then, after Double O, you hit a big climb coming over Fire Tower on the return leg. And so last year I kind of went over the top of someone else's attack and was able to get away and hold it all the way to the end. This year I put in a pretty big effort going up Fire Tower on the way back and, was not able to get away, but I was able to get it down to just 3 of us, whereas Peter, Chris and myself.
Gotcha.
And we had a pretty good gap over the top of Fire Tower. And then probably the last really decisive point in the course is there's a really steep little nasty pitch, maybe just 5K before the finish. And so I kind of had that in the back of my mind too, just in case other plans didn't work out, to keep that point in mind as somewhere to really go all in and see if you can make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then after the turnaround Double O, it does get pretty decisive, and yeah, a lot of winning moves have gone there, thinking back over the years.
Right, yeah. I always remember the story that Ned Overend told, that, you know, it took him 5 attacks, I think, to put a gap into Will Ross. So
yeah, that sounds about right. Yep.
So only 10 seconds between you and Chris at the finish.
I know. It was close. It was close. There was a couple points I thought I might get caught.
Have you been working on your sprint?
No. No, what sprint? I don't have a sprint hardly. Yeah, not really. It's a race of attrition, I think, and I don't think either Chris or I really fancy ourselves sprinters. You won't confuse either of us for a Mark Cavendish, but yeah, if it comes down to the end, I think probably the person who's the most fresh is going to win.
Yeah. It's almost like a boxer's body blows, you know, you make the field feel all of those punctuation points like a boxer hitting somebody in the ribs 15 times during the course. And when it comes time to face the bell at the end, you know, the guy who's the freshest wins. Yeah. 10 seconds.
That's a good
dude.
Analogy.
Yeah.
I know. And I thought it was even closer than that because going over the power line section just in the last few miles, I swear Chris and I were both coming over the crest of the hill at the same time. You know, I was on one side of the crest of the hill, he was on the other. I could look back and see him just right there. But
man,
I always think getting into that last downhill section, 2K to go, there's kind of a fast, twisty, it's the last section of kind of the rookie trail you're on, the first sprint trail right before you make the final right hand. You can get through that section, and someone's not on your wheel, then I think you can hold them off, you know. So it's just kind of a countdown to get to that point. And yeah, that is how it played out.
Pretty incredible. You know, the pretty incredible that Madison, Wisconsin, has such a talented field of athletes. So congratulations to you both.
Thank you. Thank you.
You guys,
yeah, there's a lot of good riders in town. Every time I go out and ride, there's always the opportunity to ride with other people who are, you know, as strong or stronger than I am. So, yeah, I'm blessed with that.
Yeah, Madison is a great bike town. That is for sure. And let's thank your sponsors for. I know Neff Cycle Sport is.
Sure, yeah. First
team,
and foremost,
right?
Neff Cycle Service. They make it all happen, and really excited to work with Otso this year on the new Wojtek bike. Was amazing. Had just some great results and some great riding all winter on it. I was really impressed with the way it handled. So big shout out to those guys, and Head Wheels.
Right now.
Coming through with the ultimate race wheel. Couldn't done it without those guys. And of course, SRAM and some of the other players we work with through the NEF team. Big thanks to all those guys.
Cool. And, of course, Double Chocolate Championship Cookies.com.
Can't make it happen without the cookies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Heather, you got anybody to add there?
No, I mean, I'll just, you know, if Corey was speaking there, I wanted to just say, here. I mean, Otso and Head, they're just such sweet, sweet products that I think just anybody who jumps on those and uses that, they make you a better cyclist, I swear. And I've just been super, I just got a new Wahila C from Otso.
Oh, right on, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, she's only been out for two rides, but I was thinking the other day, I was like, man, the geometry of these bikes, I feel like were just made for me, both of the Wojtek and that Wahila C. So just super impressed with the quality.
Very cool. Well, we'll have to have you back on the program because we're reviewing some gravel bikes. We'll be reviewing the Wahila stainless bike.
Ooh.
And I just built up yesterday a framed basswood, all carbon wheels, and just roll. Man, Oh, my thumbs are not strong enough to deal with gravel bike narrower rims. And I had to heat up the tires, and I put the tires in front of a, and like I had to use bead slip and black magic to get those tires on, but they're on now. But yeah. I really appreciate you guys being on the program, and good luck to you, and stay Thank safe. You. And you know what? I forgot to do a couple of the things that we had talked about because
before I
go into my little closing there, Corey, I wanted to bring up the hand wrist elbow trail deal that you have going with Madison and Imba. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that now that I murdered it with the title?
You had such a nice transition there, Gomez. You were talking about what a great town Madison was.
Oh, I know.
And I thought it was coming.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so an exciting project I'm working on as part of my day job is developing or planning at this stage an urban single track network in the city of Madison. So I've put this on social media a little bit. It's been out there through IMBA's website, but City of Madison applied for and received a trail planning grant from IMBA last year. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a new venture for both the city and IMBA and their arm. It's called the IMBA Trail Solutions. And it's a service, a design firm, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. Arm of IMBA that is trying to grow the service of helping municipalities and landowners establish trail networks on their property. And so they are in the process now, and we're working together through this process starting in spring, or pretty much first of the year 2020, of going through a lot of the green spaces in the city and creating a proposed trail network, kind of a master plan. Mm-hmm. And it's underway right now, but we'll get to a point at some point where we'll have a series of public meetings and, people will get to come advocate for trails or, maybe other residents will come and, be opposed to them. And we'll kind of work together with everyone to outline future potential sites for both parallel single track and, single track nodes or bike parks or kind of small destinations scattered throughout the city that people can ride to, hopefully at least somewhat on a combination of dirt trail and existing bike routes, whether it be paved paths or shared use, on city streets, things like that.
This is it always reminded me of what I had read about and seen on the internet that they had done in Bentonville. And
yeah,
the video that I'm thinking of, if it's like that, oh man, that would you?
Yeah, Bentonville's
so
really
sweet.
Kind of, yeah. And Bentonville's really the gold standard for this style of trail system. When landowners, cities, municipalities talk about developing mountain bike trails or facilities, there's a couple models they could really look to, and probably the best known model of the urban single track network is Bentonville. And another model, for example, might be like a destination bike park, and maybe the best example of that is Valmont Park in Boulder. So mm-hmm. We've been working with the local IMBA chapter here in Madison Corp to survey members going back all the way to maybe 2016-2017, deciding what our best foot forward was. And I think there was a lot of enthusiasm for the urban single track model. And so this grant is really pursuing that model. It's not really closing the door on other larger facilities or destination bike parks, for example. all those things could still potentially happen. It's just outlining how they might all fit together so that the combination of different trails can be something that's greater than the sum of the parts.
Right on. Well, my hat's off to you, amigo. Yeah, that's such a huge undertaking.
Thanks.
And
it is
so good.
Thank you. And I hope that it ends up being successful. It's just in the very preliminary stages right now. And hopefully if we talk again next year, I'll have some more and better news to share.
Cool. Then there's just one other thing that I was curious about. I follow you on the social networks, and you had posted about how, because of COVID-19, the pandemic, that many of the events are closed, being canceled and some postponed, but you're still training. And so I'm just curious to see, you know, like how this has affected your output or your attitude or what motivates you to put these training, the 8 week or 6 week, these stages together.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, it's different. These are unprecedented times, I think, and it's different for everyone. And as the COVID was descending upon us and we were kind of coming to grasp what this was going to mean for all of our lives. You know, of course, the first concern is your health and well-being, and then your livelihood, and then after that, how it affects your hobbies and your passions in life. And I think probably everyone's making different decisions based on that matrix, but Heather and I are lucky enough that we haven't, our health and our livelihood haven't been drastically affected yet. So we still had the ability to go out and train. And then I think, at some point this is going to pass. And right now it looks like a lot of the racing in the first half of 2020 is not going to proceed as planned, but at some point it will resume. And I still love racing, and I want to be as ready as possible when the racing does resume. And I was thinking about this a little bit and talking with some friends. And when you do a big training block like this, whether it's, you know, 3 week block or 6 week block or multiple blocks stacked upon one another, even if you don't have a race at the end of that block, you still make gains, and the next block builds upon the previous one. And maybe this is an opportunity, since you don't have racing, to interrupt what you would describe as an ideal training block. It's an opportunity to work and build on some things that you wouldn't otherwise have a chance to work and build on. And then when this does finally pass, you can come out the other side better than you were.
Well, right on. Now, yeah. Have you... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to add, I mean, I think the other part, you know, is that it still brings about this bit of normalcy into what are very abnormal times. And so I think that's also a key part of it. And, you know, that kind of keeps the motivation. Like, yep, you know, we're still going to be able to use this fitness at some point. So you might as well go. And this is what we do. So I think that normalcy and that, you know, that we are privileged to not have that interrupted at this moment in time is pretty outstanding. And I'll also say that, you know, for me, I'm not putting down the block that I might be otherwise at this moment. And I'm welcoming that too. So I think, you know, for people who are like, oh, well, I'm about the process and the end game and the racing, you know, I think, you know, you can also say, hey, use this time to reconnect so that when that race is on the calendar, you're going to be ready and raring to go. I mean, I think it's sort of like, you know, if you get injured and you're not able to do what you love, or you have to postpone a race, oftentimes you come back fired up and more focused and more determined than ever before. And so I think that would be sort of my words of wisdom to folks who are being like, "Listen, I got nothing because I don't know what I'm going to race." Okay, keep some level of fitness for your health, you know, for you and your health, both physical and mental.
Right.
And know that this time away can also be really useful as well to, you know, whether it's you're focusing on your core or, you know, just kind of enjoying being out and moving your body. I think there's also benefits and viewpoints from that way as well.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, that for me, it's such a good mental therapy to go out and ride, just empty your mind and turn off your brain and have fun. So
you're here.
Well, cool cats. Thanks for being on the show. You're a delight as always.
Thanks for having us.
This is my game show host personality coming out there.
Like it. We had one. We'll happy to be a part of it. Happy we could get the results that we got an invite back.
Well, we're cool. Heck yeah. So thanks again. Take care.
Yeah. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Check us out on Instagram at fatbike.com.
Till then. I'm Ambrose, don't question me at the Fat Republicans, Team Scandinavians.